We have been looking at the book of Psalms for some time now, and will be for some time to come. And so I hope that you'll open up your Bibles this morning to the 37th Psalm. Number 37 will be the one that we'll consider here in just a moment. As an introduction to that, though, I thought I'd also introduce you to this young man, who, of course, everybody knows. There are some people who are truly amazing. The lives that they lead just cause you to stand back and say, wow. They stand out because of who they are or because of the things that they do. Steve Jobs, of course, invented a whole line of products that changed things. He came up with ideas and was able to implement them, had a huge business and was able to organize it in such a manner that it made a difference on a worldwide level. There are some people then who change things to such an extent that they kind of set the standards, and then everything else gets weighed against them. They are the leaders that have set in order then a system, an arrangement, so that all of us have to relate to them in one form or manner or another. Now, these people then, whether they like it or not, are instructors. They are shaping the lives of other people. Steve Jobs did that, and certainly did that spectacularly in the realm of computers. Whether you use his products or not, you will have heard of him. The other companies that reject him and are at war with him, you know, to sell their products, are still interacting with him in competition with him. Steve Jobs taught the world how to do certain things. And you know, he died in October of 2011, so it's been a year and a half, and his death is still in the news. It's just constantly people are comparing themselves and their products and their way of organizing businesses and whatnot, you know, to that man. This time of year, of course, we're all thinking about commencement addresses. We've had three that graduated from high school here in the congregation, of whom we're very proud. And those three and all the rest of you I would recognize and appreciate. You know, you've been much a help, a central part of the congregation here. And I would recommend that you go online and listen to Steve Jobs. He's a worldly guy, as far as this thing from a Christian, but he has some good advice for people, in this case graduating from college. And so he's making a difference in the world today, even though he's been dead for a year and a half. Now, I still see articles that involve him in one form or another, reprints of his own material, or people that are referencing them. And in fact, I bought and read the biography myself. How many of you read Steve Jobs' biography? I'm the only one. Well, that's fine. The guy led an amazing life. Truly did. Knowing that he was going to die, he commissioned that a biography be written, which I myself have read. It's a Newsweek article that was, in fact, printed just the month before he passed away. They declared him to be a genius, talked about his driving Apple to victory there, you know, in the black headline, and pointed out the obvious that he did, in fact, change our world. But, brother, he's gone, and he's been gone for, you know, a year and a half. He was also instantly replaced. The company goes on without him. And really, I don't think anybody in this room would want to be much like him as a human being. Because I did read the biography, and the fact of the matter is, he was just a despicable character. And the people that worked with him really didn't like him, and he drove them off, you know, by the hundreds. He wanted no part of just having to associate with the man. It's pretty grim reading from a moral or a character standpoint. See what kind of a man he was behind the scenes. He sure enough changed the world. But we love his inventions. We use the stuff that he created. We really don't want to be much like the guy. And as a matter of fact, there was a reason given by Steve himself, which was oft-quoted even before he died, that he had handpicked his biographer and told that biographer that he wanted that book written to tell very unvarnished and honestly the story of his life for this reason. Does that not break your heart? He admitted that he had spent so little time with his children that he wanted a biographer to write the story of his life so that after he died, his children would know him. That just makes me want to weep. That is such a sad, sad thing. Some people can change the whole world and be strangers to their own children. Big contrast to this is a guy by the name of David. David writes the majority of the Psalms. David is the man we've been studying so far through the words that he has written in this poetry that we call Psalms. He is also gone, but in this case, we all want to be like him, don't we? From our childhood, the first stories, you know, we all learn is that when even he was very, very young, he was taking on the world. He was making a name for himself. He was changing things and set a standard for faith and for courage that we all of us appreciate to this day. We really want to be like him. It is, by the way, my all-time favorite artist rendition of David there. Isn't that great, scrawny little kid? You know, and there he is against the laughing giant and all the whole Philistine army. But, you know, he believed in his God. He believed that he could make a difference. Now, while we're thinking about people, we flash two faces up that you probably come to know. One of them only in the course of the last week. The other one, of course, you'll know quite well. And the question arises, what are these guys? Great debate raging right now. Dick Cheney on the left was Vice President of the United States. We were attacked on 9/11. The Patriot Act was passed. Various surveillance, you know, activities were also initiated. And now this young man at the ripe old age of 29, Edward Snowden, has, you know, abandoned the country, fled the country, and has revealed some of those secrets and really rocked our boat in the last week, hasn't he? The United States has been just kind of destabilized here. And so they're out to try to capture him. He's hiding over in Hong Kong, and suspicions are that he, you know, according to Cheney, that he may actually be a spy for the Chinese. And as I look at these two guys, I haven't got a clue. Have you? Which one's right and which one's wrong? Which one's the hero and which one is the villain? I just don't know enough about either one of them. But in the course of our lives, brethren, we're going to meet all these people that we've been talking about. We're going to meet amazing people in the world. We're going to meet, I think, very David-like people in Christ. People in our associations within the church who are just marvels of the morality in the sight of our God and in our own sight. And we're probably going to meet our fair share of heroes and villains, probably not quite on the national level that these two have managed, you know, to acquire, but we're going to meet people that will impact our lives both positively and negatively, both physically and spiritually. And Psalm number 37 has something to say about both evil people and good people, and how we ought to think about them and how we ought to relate to them. Now, unlike the preceding Psalms that we've been looking at, this one's considerably larger. It also has two very different types of information here. So we're not going to be able to go through it just in straight order, reading one verse after the other for our purposes of studying it this morning. So if you're taking notes, and I highly recommend it here, you know, please see that information and advice about evil people, the people who will do us personal harm, is listed in this verse, in verses 1 and 2, then a long section, 10 through 22, and again a fairly long section in 32 through 40. So that's the material, and you can see it's skipping verses, so he's going to interweave it with some righteous people too, and we'll talk about them in a block in just a minute. But first, let's go through these verses and consider what's said in Psalm 37. 40 verses. We'll have to go fairly quickly. But he says at the start, do not fret because of evildoers, and be not envious toward evildoers. Now, I'm using altogether a different way of describing what that verse says, rather than do not fret and do not be envious. But either way, isn't that what he's saying? Is that evil people, brethren, really ought not to command much of our attention. We certainly don't want to be anxious about it. We don't want to be worrying about it. We don't want to be fretting about it. Yes, it may be that the United States has just suffered the worst security breach, you know, in our history. Is that keeping you awake at night? It really shouldn't. Or it should be that the worst and terrible thing that happened, you know, was years and years ago when all of our, you know, rights were taken away and Snowden's the hero. Were you fretting about it then? Because half the country was then, and half the country's fretting now, and most of the country can't figure out who's right and who's wrong right now. And I'm thinking David would say, why bother? Don't fret about that. Don't be envious either of evildoers. You'll meet plenty. And some you'll never meet will have profound influence over your life. But evildoers are not people that you need to concern yourself much about. Now skip on down to verses 10 and 11. Here what he adds to that. Yet a little while and the wicked man will be no more, and you will look carefully for his place, and he will not be there. But the humble will inherit the land. You might know that as Matthew 5:5, where Jesus used it as one of the Beatitudes. Remember, blessed be the meek, they will inherit the land, the earth, and will delight themselves in abundant prosperity. So again, I'm paraphrasing, you know, wildly, dramatically here. But what David says is, these guys shouldn't fill your thoughts. And you just remember, they are all of them doomed evil people. But you who strive to serve your God, you who strive to be God-like, you who are striving morally in your characters and personalities and in your behavior, the compassion you show to your fellow mankind and the good deeds that you do to help out in this earth, you're going to endure. God has established a system himself that favors those who are humble, who are disciplined, who are righteous. They tend to live longer and do better on this earth. Many exceptions, we've talked about that a lot in Wednesday nights in our Proverbs class. But that's the system. That's the way of the world. That's the way that it usually goes. So, brethren, I don't know. And while I care, I'm not concerned about Edward Snowden's damage, you know, to the United States of America. Stand or fall, it'll be a part of God's plan, won't it? So Snowden did us good or evil. Snowden, however you pronounce that. You know, it's all covered. God knows what's going on, and I sure don't have to spend much time reading about it or lying awake about it. Those who are evil, whether it's Cheney or Snowden or whoever it is, you know, they're all in God's plan. And God's plan does not favor those who are opposed to him and his way of doing things. God favors us. God's concerned about us, protects us, cares about us, wants to see us live happy, long, and productive lives here on this earth. Now, continuing on, verses 12 through 15, the wicked plots against the righteous, gnashes at him with his teeth. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees his day coming. And that's our problem, brethren. We know they're doomed, but we don't get to see the day coming. We don't know when. So we tend to worry about it. But in 14, the wicked have drawn the sword and bent their bow to cast down the afflicted and the needy, to slay those who are upright in conduct. Their sword will enter their own heart, and their bows will be broken. Now here in the Bible class this morning, we had some fascinating material in Acts chapter 14. And we saw the wicked bending their bows against Paul. We looked at that 14th chapter and saw him driven out of one city after another, from Iconium to Lystra to Derbe, and not satisfied with driving him out of their towns. They then went as far as 65 miles, remember how hard it was to travel in those days, to chase him at another town and drive him out of that one too. This is something he'll experience, we'll learn, on more than one occasion. They hated him with such a passion that they would pursue him for many, many miles. They drew their sword. And what did Paul do? We found out in Acts chapter 14. Driven out of Iconium, driven out of Lystra, driven down to Derbe, what did he do? He turns around and he heads right back to every single one of those towns and continues preaching. And as a matter of fact, on the return trip, establishes elderships in those congregations and brings more people to Christ. And there were multitudes the first time. And so all the efforts that these people expended to defeat him, they're all of themselves defeated. Christianity is still here, but there's not much of the Roman Empire left behind either. God was on Paul's side. God was on the Christians' side. God was on the church and the kingdom's side for a kingdom that was eternal. Nothing can defeat it. Nothing can destroy it. And here we are after all their best efforts. So David gives us to understand in the psalm that he's not the first to experience this. The Christians of the first century would experience it, and brethren, the Christians of the 21st century will experience it as well. God is for us. Who can be against us? Continuing the reading now, better is the little of the righteous than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord sustains the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the blameless, and their nearness will be forever. They will not be ashamed in the time of evil, and in the days of famine they will have abundance, but the wicked will perish. And the enemies of the Lord will be like the glory of the pastures. They vanish like smoke. They vanish away. The wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives, for those blessed by him will inherit the land. There's that beatitude, Matthew 5:5 again. But those cursed by him will be cut off. Brother, what those verses say is that even if, as they start off, you are one who only has a little, well, better is the little of the righteous. You are better off now, and you're going to be way better off later in serving your God. Forget about the evil ones. They're doomed. God is on your side, and they will be destroyed. So, excuse me, he then concludes, starting the reading at verse 32 now, skipping over, directly addressing the righteous, but at 32, the wicked spies upon the righteous and seeks to kill him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand. Paul fell into their hands many times, brother, we saw in Acts 14, and then escaped. Paul was stoned and left for dead, dragged out of the city, and rose right up again and returned to preach some more that same day, apparently, and then off to Derby after that. So in 32, the wicked spies upon the righteous and seeks to kill him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand or let him be condemned when he is judged. Wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you'll see it. I have seen violent, wicked men spreading himself like a luxuriant tree in its native soil. Then he passes away, and lo, he was no more. I sought for him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man, and behold the upright, for the man of peace will have a posterity, but transgressors will be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the wicked will be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble, and the Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. But brethren, the part about all of this that we don't like is that first word in my paraphrase again. He said, wait for it. It does take time. It does not always happen immediately. It maybe never happens immediately. It doesn't feel like it happens immediately. But God is on His throne, and all is well with the world. No matter what you're going through, no matter how unhappy you are, no matter how miserably you happen to be suffering, the principle that God establishes over all things is that even when you are suffering horribly by wicked people who have set themselves and announced it, that they are going to defeat God, His plans, and His people. Brethren, there's God's advice. Forget about them. Just remember, they're doomed. God is on your side. And things are just fine now, and you're better off now, and going to be even better off later. So just wait it out. Learn the patience. Learn the ability to be content, as Paul would say himself. Now, verses 3 through 9 and then 23 through 31 are directed or are about the righteous and God's promises to them. So you can see there's not as many verses that deal with the righteous here directly. But now we're going to go back, have a look at those, and we're going to start with verses 3 and 4. 3 and 4. Trust in the Lord. And do good. And dwell in the land and cultivate, for all this talk we've had about the land so far in this passage, as well as in the rest of the book, or the psalm rather, what's the cultivation? Is it dirt? Well, you cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, that's a lot of different things to be doing here. Five of them, as a matter of fact. Trust. Do good. Dwell. Cultivate. And delight. Those key words have to do with our recognition that the world may just be in flames around us, and evil people singled us out, as Paul was in city after city after city, the New Testament example. But David's life, brethren, was one of being pursued like nobody else in all of the book. And David, who really understood what it was to be on the receiving end of persecution, from the smallest to the greatest in the land, were after him. David, who knew everything that there is ever to learn from suffering at the hands of evil people, said this in verse 3. Trust in the Lord. Do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, brethren, He also makes these things contingent, doesn't He? So often I'm afraid, we have a song that revolves around this whole thing. We really just don't receive the blessings of our God because we don't realize that these contingencies are the foundation for those blessings. And so we don't trust in the Lord. And we're not doing as much good as we could. And we may be dwelling in the land, but we're not dwelling in that land in the name of the Lord, cultivating that faithfulness, that righteousness, and delighting in Him and in His law. And so we lose out on these blessings. And then, you know, we look at the heavens and we wonder, why am I suffering like this? Why are these bad people treating me this way? Well, maybe because God has lessons for you to learn in all of these five categories so that you'll see their overthrow. But He needs to see what we learn, how we handle it, and what we become, and the fruit that we bear under those circumstances in that crucible before He's going to grant us then the desire of our hearts. 5 and 6. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in Him, and He will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your judgment as the noonday. Commit yourself to the Lord. And notice also, it didn't say just commit yourself. It's commit your way. If I commit my way, that's not a mental thing where I'm really devoted to the Lord, as important as that is. But if I commit my way to the Lord, that means every step I take, everything I do, everything I say, everything I think, my way is manifested in the life that I lead. If I commit my way to the Lord, it's not just what I think about Him. It's not just I'm just the best Bible scholar the world ever saw. I know more about the Bible than anybody ever. Which would be a good thing in and of itself. But that's not what the Lord's really looking for. What He's looking for is an individual who's walking in every step that Jesus took. An individual that is as humble as He is. That is as sacrificial as He was. That is as devoted to others as He was. That lives the life of Jesus the Christ over again today. Committing our way so that He lives in us and in the things that we do. In comes 7 and 8. This is my personal favorite, I think. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. That's the third time in this psalm. It only leads to evil doing. So you see why I like this one. There's a lot. It sounds like kicking back in the way. Rest and wait and cease and forsake. You know, these are the things that you're just not going to participate in. But it is, brethren, resting, waiting, ceasing, and forsaking. There's an awful lot of misery we bring on ourselves. Because we're worried about the evildoer. We're worried about the circumstances we find ourselves in. We're worried about how other people are behaving. No. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way. Cease from anger. Forsake wrath. And don't fret. But did you notice at the end of verse 8, the why? The why? What does it lead to? Worry, brethren. Anxiety. Fretting about all the evil that men do. About how messed up that the world is. About how mistreated you have been. All of that woe is me. What does the end of verse 8 say it leads to? Only leads to. It leads to you going down the same path. Fill your mind with the evil that these other people do, and you will be tempted to vengeance. You will be tempted to return unto them as they did unto you. You will be very tempted to want to pay back. And that rise within you of anger and then wrath and then finally deeds to show people what they really deserve. And it's all flowing out of this being unable to just relax, go with that flow and learn to deal with it, to be content, Paul would say, in all those circumstances. Verses 9 and 10. Evildoers will be cut off. Those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Yet a little while, and the wicked man will be no more. You'll look carefully for his place. He will not be there. But the humble will inherit the land and will delight themselves in abundant prosperity. Well, we read those verses already. And we saw that they were directed at the evil. But they're directed at us, too. And within them is a promise that while you are to wait, it's not long. Brother, we all understand that day with the Lord is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day, and that it may seem like it's long to us. But it's time for us to get on God's time schedule. It's not long. It's not long at all. The oldest guy in the world died this week. He was 112 years old. Now that's a long life, isn't it? And it's still smoke that appears for a little while and then vanishes away, isn't it? That's all it was. So, big deal. Big deal. 7 year by reason of strength, 80 years. And what did he get? Why? He got 40 more. How long is that? Brethren, it is not long. It's not long. And you can do it. 23 and 24. The steps of a man are established by the Lord. He delights in His way. When he falls, and he'll fall, and you'll fall, he shall not be hurled headlong, because the Lord is the one who holds his hand. God offered a second promise through David in Psalm 37, who knew what it was to be cast down. God himself will take you by the hand to lift you up. God knows what you're going through. What you're going through is wrong on one sense, but teaching you something on the other. And when you've learned, God will raise you up. Now, 25 and 26. I have been young, and now I am old, David says. So that's interesting. He wrote this one late in life. He wrote this one after he had experienced all of those things that we've mentioned in long lists. I've been young, and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging bread. All day long, he is gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. So God promises that your family will be okay. Not just you, but your descendants after you, when you devote yourself to righteousness. Brother, I think that's one of the greatest promises in all the Bible. It is oft repeated in the Old Testament that your righteousness will have an effect down through the generations behind you to bring good things upon those you have loved so much. And we'll finish this lesson with verses 27 through 31. Depart from evil. Do good, so you will abide forever. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his godly ones. They are preserved forever. But the descendants of the wicked will be cut off. The righteous will inherit the land and dwell in it forever. Now, if you take your notes, and I know many of you do, grab your pencil here, and three times it's come up now. Next to verse 11, put Matthew 5:5. Write it in the margin. Next to verse 22, put Matthew 5:5. And right here, brother, next to verse 29, write in the margin, Matthew 5:5. Three times he gives us the beatitude that Jesus would repeat at the head of the Sermon on the Mount. You've got nothing to worry about. Brethren, nothing. And I don't know where this country's going. Maybe old Snowden was a spy for the Chinese from the beginning. Maybe he'll disappear from Hong Kong and be well taken care of the rest of his days, live to be 113, in China. And a wealthy day. Maybe that's the way it's all going. And maybe the United States is about to just wither and die. Maybe he's revealed secrets that will defeat us because the next terrorist attack is going to bring our whole country to its knees. Maybe that's what's coming for us, brethren. And if so, then God knows. It's just. The time is right. And you saints, you're okay. Because you'll live forever. God will not let you fall headlong. Your descendants after you will be blessed. God's promises are these. It won't be long. God himself will lift you up. Your family after you will be okay. And you will dwell forever. You're going to live forever. What is wrong with that? Appreciate your attention this morning. If you're not a Christian, if you have not seen in both the Old Testament and the New the advantage to serving your God, if you have not believed that gospel, repented of your sins, confessed Jesus with your mouth unto salvation, Romans says, and been baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, well, don't wait any longer. Let today be the day of salvation. We can help you to study. We can help you with personal problems. If, like David, who sought help, we can be of help to you in your life. Let it be known. Just come and speak with me, please, as we now stand and